Our speaker today is Dr. Sue Edwards, serves as Associate Professor of Educational Ministries and Leadership at Dallas Theological Seminary. Dr. Edwards' heartbeat is to reinforce ministry partnerships between men and women, which strengthen church and parachurch organizations locally and worldwide. She has 35 years of experience in Christian education and Bible teaching, directing women's ministries, retreats, and conference speaking, training teams and teachers, overseeing staff, and writing curriculum. As a former pastor to women at her local church, she experienced healthy men and women partnerships and staff, and her passion is to pass on what she has learned. She is the author of Leading Women Who Wound, Mixed Ministry, New Doors in Ministry to Women, Women's Retreats, A Creative Planning Guide, and the Discovery Series, which includes numerous Bible studies. Dr. Edwards' research and teaching interests include women's epistemologies and leadership styles. She is the mentor professor with Dr. Joy Baker and DTS Women in Ministry concentration of the Doctor of Ministry degree. She is married to David, who I know is here with her to heckle the speaker today. And I also know that in the write-up, Dr. Sue said this: she especially enjoys romping with her five grandchildren. So would you please join me today in welcoming Dr. Sue Edwards.
Well, good morning. It is wonderful to be with you. Admiral William McRaven is the ninth commander of the U.S. Naval Special Operations. And last May, he delivered a rousing and memorable graduation address at University of Texas. And he challenged the graduates there that one person can change the world for the better. And he used his Naval SEAL training to teach them 10 life lessons. Well, I was reading the transcript of his commencement address in the Wall Street Journal, and all the way through it, I thought about you, because you are investing time, money, blood, sweat, at this time in the semester, sometimes tears, as you work through your ministry challenges. And you are doing this because you believe that God has called you to be part of His first line forces for Jesus Christ. Spiritual soldiers on the front lines. Now, SEAL training needs to be rigorous because SEAL life is rigorous. And ministry training needs to be rigorous because ministry life is demanding. Just like the military, ministry is not for sissies. We are here to train you for more than just biblical and theological head knowledge. You are here to train as a whole person, to go into ministry life and face well both the joys, of which there are many, and the demands, of which there are many as well. Well, SEAL training begins in Coronado, California. It's 6 months of long, torturous runs in the sand, midnight swims off San Diego Bay, obstacle courses, unending calisthenics, days without sleep, and always being cold, wet, and miserable. The Admiral describes his training, SEAL training, as a lifetime of challenges crammed into 6 months. I think probably your seminary training you might think of as a lifetime of challenges crammed into 2, 4, 6, however many years it takes you to get through it. We do spread the stress out a little more, and I think we give you more encouragement than the SEALs get in their training. But both military training and SEAL training and ministry training do need to be demanding. It's something that prepares you for an exciting future, but again, there are challenges. So this morning, I'm going to talk to you about the 10 lessons that the Admiral raised with his audience in this commencement address, but I have tweaked them for you, for seminary students. And my prayer is that they will help you, especially at this time in the semester. Every morning, number one, every morning in SEAL training, instructors come into the barracks to inspect your bed. And if you did it right, the corners are square, the covers are taut, there is a pillow at the base of the headboard, and there is a blanket neatly folded at the end of the rack. That's bed in Navy talk. I know that because I'm a Coast Guard brat. My father was in the Coast Guard for 30 years. And it seems like a rather mundane task. I mean, doesn't it? And yet, SEALs are required to make their beds to perfection. And when you think about it, it does seem a little ridiculous. I mean, here they are training to be hardened battle SEALs, great leaders. But McRaven insists that the wisdom of this simple act has been proven to him many times over. And I would agree. If you make your bed well every day, you have accomplished the first task of the day. And it's going to give you a sense of pride, a sense of encouragement that will lead to your doing the next task well, and the next task well, and the next task well. And by the end of the day, that one task completed well will have turned into many tasks completed well. And making your bed reinforces the truth that little things in life matter. And if you can't do the little things well, you won't do the big things well. In addition, if by chance you have a miserable day, you come home to a bed that is made, which may give you some encouragement that the next day will be a little better. So, if you want to change the world for Jesus, start off by making your bed. Second, during SEAL training, the students are divided up into boat crews of seven, three on each side and a steersman to guide the dinghy. And every day, the crew meets on the shore, paddles out through the surf, and down several miles down the beach. Now, in winter, the surf off San Diego can get 8 to 10 feet high. And it's exceedingly difficult to get through that surf unless everyone is paddling in sync to the stroke of the steersman. Everybody must exert equal effort. Everybody must be involved. Everybody must paddle. And SEALs learn early that you cannot change the world alone, that you need help. And it's a pride issue. We are going to need, as well as seminary graduates and seminary ministers, the friends, colleagues, the goodwill of strangers. You're going to need help from your brothers and sisters, help from your professors. More than that, we know that you are going to need the help every single stroke of the way from the Almighty. And if you don't depend desperately on God for the work He's calling you to do, you won't make it in this challenging world. We're all in this boat together, and we've got to learn to respect and work well with one another. And if we don't, we're going to end up on that desolate shore alone, far short of the wonderful destination that what could have been, what God has planned for your life. So if you want to change the world for Jesus, find someone to help you paddle. Number three. In McRaven's SEAL class, they were divided up into six boat crews. He was in the boat crew with the tall guys, but there was also a boat crew they called the Munchkin crew. All the guys in that crew were 5'5" or under. It was composed of an American Indian, an African American, a Polish American, a Greek American, an Italian American, and two tough kids from the Midwest. They out-paddled, out-swam, and outran all the other boat crews. Now, the big men crew would make good-natured fun of the little flippers that the little men, the munchkin crew, would put on their tiny little feet before each swim. But somehow, those guys always got the last laugh, because they always arrived at their destination long before anybody else. The Admiral says SEAL training was a great equalizer, and seminary training is as well. What matters isn't your color or your ethnic background or your social status or how cool or how smart or even how gifted and talented you are. God typically uses the little people to do his work, to declare his great name. So often, he gets more of the credit that way. So if you want to change the world for Jesus, measure people by the size of their heart and not the size of their flippers. Number four, several times a week, they would all line up for uniform inspection, which was exceptionally thorough. I mean, your hat had to be starched, your uniform pressed perfectly, no smudges on your belt buckle. But it seemed like no matter how much effort you put into starching your hat or pressing your uniform or shining your belt buckle, they always found something wrong. And for failing uniform inspection, you would be ordered to go fully clothed out into the surf, wet from head to toe, come back onto the sand, and roll around until you were covered, every part of your body, with sand. And the effect was known as a sugar cookie. And you stayed in that uniform the rest of the day, cold and wet and sandy. And many students, no matter what happened, they just couldn't accept the fact that all their work on their uniform it was not appreciated. And the Admiral said that those were the students that didn't make it, because they didn't understand the purpose of the drill. You see, you're never going to succeed perfectly. You're not going to have a perfect uniform. You're not going to have a perfect ministry. Sometimes, no matter how well you prepare, how much you depend on God, whatever you do, sometimes things just fall apart. That's the way of the world. But I have found that God so often trains us more through our failures than through our successes. So if you want to change the world for Jesus, get over being a sugar cookie and just move forward. Number five, in SEAL training every day, you're challenged with multiple physical events. Long runs, long swims, obstacle courses, hours of calisthenics, all to test your endurance. And every one of these trials has a particular standard or time that you need to meet. And if you fail to meet that standard, your name is posted on a list. And those on that list at the end of the day are invited to what is known as a circus. A circus is 2 hours of additional training designed to wear you down. And nobody wants a circus, because a circus means for that day you just didn't measure up. It may well mean more fatigue in the future and another circus the next day. During SEAL training, though, everyone sometime made that circus list. Yet, he says something interesting happened to those who were constantly on the list. Over time, those who did 2 hours of extra calisthenics got stronger and stronger, and the pain of the circuses built this inner strength and resiliency, and they ended up looking something like this. Now, don't you wish that spiritual strength showed on the outside the way physical strength does? I sure do, but God sees it. Maybe to God, you and I look like that. But the bottom line is that ministry is filled with circuses. You will fail. You may well fail often. It may well be painful and discouraging. At times, it will test you to your very core. But it's been my experience that so often, the very thing that we go through that strengthens us is just what we need around the corner to meet the challenge that God knows we are going to have to face. So if you want to change the world for Jesus, don't be afraid of the circuses. They so often are for our benefit. Number 6, twice a week, trainees are required to run an obstacle course. 25 obstacles, the worst of which, the most challenging, is called the Slide for Life. Now, the Slide for Life is a 3-level tall tower on one side with a 200-foot rope in between to go that attaches to a lower level on the other. And the idea is you climb up, you grab the rope, and you come down hand over hand till you get to the other end. And when the Admiral's class got there, no one had broken that record for many years, for a long time, until one of the trainees in his class decided to go down the rope head first. Instead of swinging his body underneath and inching his way down, he bravely mounted the top of the rope and thrust himself forward. Now, it was a dangerous move. It seemed foolish. It was fraught with risk. But without hesitation, he slid down that rope at breakneck speed. He landed at the bottom faster than anybody else. It took half the time, and by the end, he had broken the record. If you want to change the world for Jesus, sometimes you have to slide down the obstacle head first. Now, what does that mean in ministry? Well, sometimes you have to think outside the ministry box. You'll be the ones, those of you who do, who create new methods, new ministries for new generations. And if you're brave enough to try, no matter what other people think or say, you will be the ones who will significantly change the world for Jesus. Number 7. During another phase of training, students are flown out to San Clemente Island, which is a breeding ground for great white sharks. And to pass SEAL training, you have to complete a night swim in those very waters. Before the swim, the instructors joyfully brief you on all the species of sharks that inhabit those waters. And they assure you, however, that no student has been eaten by a shark, at least not recently. And they tell you that if a shark begins to circle your position, stand your ground. Don't act afraid. Don't swim away. And if that shark who looks hungry for a midnight snack should dart towards you, muster all of your strength and just punch him in the snout. And they say he will turn and swim away. Now, in ministry, you're going to encounter some sharks, too. Out there are some unhealthy, antagonistic, sick people. Not too many, thank goodness, but if you let them, they can seriously discourage you. Marshall Shelley, editor of Leadership Journal, calls them well-intentioned dragons. And if you hope to thrive in ministry, you're going to have to learn to deal with the sharks. Now, you can't muster all your strength and punch them in the snout, but you will have to learn peacemaking skills, how to navigate a conflict with grace, with strength. But if you want to change the world for Jesus, don't back down from the sharks. Number 8, Navy SEALs learn to conduct underwater attacks against enemy ships. And it begins when they're dropped off several miles outside a hypothetical enemy harbor, and they swim underwater for several miles to get to their destination. And underwater, most of the time, there's light that streams in, even when they're well below the surface. But as they get closer and closer to the ship, the structure blocks the light, the moonlight, until when they, and they have to get to the keel of the ship in order to complete their mission. And the closer they get, the darker it gets. Till under the keel of that ship, often you can't see your hand in front of your face. And it's so easy to get disoriented, to become confused, and to fail the mission. But every SEAL knows, every SEAL is taught that at that darkest moment of the mission, that is the time to keep your calm, to stay composed, to muster all of your tactical skills, your strength, your physical power should be brought to bear. And I would argue that the very same thing is true in ministry. That the darkest moments, that is the time to muster all of your spiritual strength. Because when you are on the front lines, there will be times when you will enter into what is truly the darkness of a spiritual battle. And you'll feel alone. And sometimes all you'll feel is the savage breath of the enemy breathing down your neck. But that is the time, and that is why your training needs to be rigorous, because you are stronger than you ever believed as you go through those times that stretch you and cause you to see what you're truly made of. You must be your very best at those darkest moments. If you want to change the world for Jesus, you must be your very best in the darkest moments. Number 9, the 9th week of SEAL training is called Hell Week for a good reason. 6 days of no sleep, constant physical and mental harassment, and one day at the mud flats. Now, the mud flats are a swampy patch of terrain where the mud will just engulf you. On Wednesday of Hell Week, his company paddled down to the mud flats and they knew they were going to be spending the next 15 hours in the freezing cold mud, the howling wind, and the incessant pressure of the instructors to quit. As the sun began to set that Wednesday night, he recalls that someone in his class committed some horrendous infraction of the rules, and they were all ordered into the mud. And the instructors told them that if just five of them would quit, they could all get out of this oppressive cold. Well, no one quit immediately, but as the night wore on, it became apparent that a number of them were thinking about giving up, and it was still 8 hours before the sun was to come up. He heard chattering teeth and shivering moans. He said it was so loud you could hardly hear anything else. But then someone began to sing. It was terribly out of tune, but it was sung with great enthusiasm, and one voice became two, and two became three, and soon all of them were singing at the top of their lungs. McRaven says, "We knew that if one of us could rise above the misery, then others could as well. The instructors threatened us with more time in the mud if we kept up the singing, but the singing persisted, and somehow the mud seemed a little warmer, the wind a little tamer, and the dawn not so far away." If I have learned anything in my almost 40 years of ministry, it is the power of hope. And hope is what we offer. Hope is what we're about. We give the world the hope that it's yearning for. It's a powerful hope. It's a redemptive hope. And our messages, our lives, our ministries must be chock full of hope. If you want to change the world for Jesus, start singing. Just give them hope, even when you're up to your neck in mud. Number 10. Finally, in SEAL training, there is a brass bell that hangs in the center of the compound, and all you have to do to quit is just walk up and ring that bell. Ring the bell, and you no longer have to get up at 5 o'clock with an instructor standing over you to see how well you made your bed. Ring the bell, and no more freezing cold swims or long runs or obstacle courses. No more enduring the hardships of training. Just ring that bell. Well, we don't have a bell on our campus, but it's just as easy to quit. Quit, drop out, go your own way. And by the way, that's what our enemy wants more than anything else. He is attempting right now to sidetrack you, to discourage you, to lie to you, to get you to quit. Quit, and no more late nights and early mornings of cranking out charts and papers. Quit, and no more books to read, and I'm talking hard books, long books, theological books. Quit, and no more exegeticals or flashcards or quizzes or exams. No more pressure to do business with the junk in your life that you'd so much rather ignore. Quit, and you fill in the blank for what makes seminary so challenging for you. But if you want to change the world for Jesus, don't you ever, ever, ever ring that bell. God wants to use men and women of grit. God has brought you here to change the world for the better. It's not easy. It shouldn't be. But it will lead to the most gratifying, satisfying, and joyful work anyone can ever do. So my words for you at this time of the semester is simply stay the course. Don't ring that bell. Start each day completing a task well. Cling to God to help you. Learn to respect and work well with your friends. Learn to ask for help. Know that life is not fair and you will fail often. But if you take some risks, if you step up when times are tough, you face down the bullies and lift up the downtrodden, and you never, ever give up. You will live the life that God has planned for you. We'll do that together in His service for His glory, and it's worth far more than any price you're paying today. So don't even go near that bell. Let's pray. Father, I lift up before you my brothers and my sisters, those chosen men and women that indeed you have brought here to train for a ministry that will change the world for you. And Lord, it is rigorous and it is challenging. And we know that it needs to be because it's preparing us for what you have for us out there. Help us to lean on you, to persevere, to move forward. Help us never to go near that bell. For your glory, we ask it. Amen.